The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up, Christians are supposed to represent Christ to the world. But according to the latest reports, Christianity has a major image problem.
So how can we be better at understanding what we've done to contribute to this?
Stay tuned as author Gabe Lyons uncovers what the next generation really thinks about Christianity.
Perception is reality for this generation. And if that's how they feel about us as Christians, that's how they're viewing Jesus, and that's his reputation to them.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm James Robinson. Betty and I are thrilled to introduce a young man that just kind of captured my attention here recently. Even though we had crossed paths when he was pretty small, he actually grew up in Thomas Road Baptist Church. The parents were active there. Grew up watching Jerry Falwell go through a transition where he was very much, you know, Christians stay out of anything related to political action, to then becoming a very strong activist. Jerry and I were close friends. I did not agree with the title Moral Majority. I said, it sounds a little pompous. I think it'll come back on you, Jerry, to he and Paul Wyatt, two very good men. But interestingly, in this church, this young man growing up and watching all that's going on and loving the Lord, which, boy, Jerry, and by the way, Jerry Jr. and Jonathan, all the family, they're our friends. Love them. Praise God for Liberty University. What an incredible university, and believe they're trying their best and effectively are training champions, and that's the desire of their heart. But Gabe Lyons grew up in the church, and he really had some encounters, Betty, about the same time you and I did, where we began to see a great need for some readjustment in our own lives as Christians, and then how to more effectively impact the whole world. And we're still learning, but we're excited about learning because we're not stuck. I mean, boy, we launched out into the deep, and we're moving, and we believe the cloud and the pillar of fire are moving, and we're not camping. We're going to live in the shelter and shadow of the Almighty, and he's on the move, which means we live as students and pupils. Well, our guest wrote a book a couple of years ago, The Unchristian, became a bestseller. I'm going to be asking him about that, but he's got a new book, and this is what caught my attention and the attention of our son-in-law and some of the other young people, you know, the 35 and under group like Craig Groeschel and his church and people we've had on. But the next Christians, and I was quite captivated by some of the insights that God's given him. And I want you to meet this leader of young men. He's got an organization called Q. I'm curious to know exactly what that might mean. I think his friends understand it, but let's ask him about it. His wife, Rebecca, and three children. But I want you to welcome Gabe Lyons to Life Today. Gabe, good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Tell me what Q stands for. I'm curious about it. Give me a lowdown.
Q simply stands for questions. We felt there was a need to have a place where Christians who were trying to engage in a world that's changed a lot from even when I was a kid, faithfully, to have a place to come together and ask questions where we could say, we might not always have the answer for you, but we certainly believe in God who can give us the answer. And if we can just create an environment where asking questions isn't something you get in trouble for, but something that was encouraged about our world, about our culture, about how do you express the gospel in a culture that's become largely disrespectful of a lot of Christians, you know, it was an environment that we could create for that. And that's become a really fruitful place for a lot of dialogue and learning for others, but also for myself.
You know, I've written several times that if you have a lot of questions, the answer is quite comfortable helping you find answers to your questions. Jesus was never uncomfortable when people challenged him or asked him questions right in the middle of his sermons. And frankly, I'm not either. I'm very comfortable there because he made me comfortable there. So I'm thrilled with the fact that you're doing this. I know that you've worked with a group called Catalyst. You've worked with a lot of young leaders, and I want you to know I appreciate what you're doing. Let me just ask you to comment on the unchristian. You know, when you delivered this, were you addressing a whole lot of it to the church world?
Yeah, the primary goal and the reason we even did this book, me and David Kinneman, who's the president of Barna Research, I commissioned this book as one of the first jobs of our nonprofit organization because I wanted to understand how 16 to 29-year-olds really felt about Christians. Not just what they would tell us when they showed up at church, but what would they tell a researcher who said, when I say the word Christian, what comes to mind? What are the top-of-mind perceptions? And we did that study and later developed a book so that Christians and church leaders specifically could better understand what was going on, because I think, like me, a lot of people were experiencing this phenomenon where they'd share with somebody their faith and immediately feel the walls go up and the conversation not go any further. And I wanted to get into understanding how a new generation was thinking about Christians, because I felt like if we could understand that dynamic, it would equip us to know our context. Just like any missionary going overseas wants to understand the culture, how people are thinking about God, religion, you know, all the ideas that drive the way they think and live. If we could better understand that, it would just better equip us to be faithful to the gospel in our season.
Can you tell us a couple of things that they would see as...
Well, the research, I mean, I know when I first read the research when it came back, it drove me to my knees because of the uncomfortableness I felt to see that basically what these 20-somethings felt about Christians were that we were anti-gay, that we were judgmental. 87% felt we were judgmental. 85% would label Christians as too political. On and on and on. We saw that people thought that Christians were only interested in getting them saved. 7 out of 10 say Christians are proselytizers. They don't really care about me or a relationship with me. They only look at me as a project, somebody they're trying to convert to their faith or get them to get me to show up at their church. And when I don't do that, they move on to somebody else. And they were giving us this real honest feedback. And so that research, for any Christian, I think there's two responses. One is to kind of self-righteously say, well, that's not me. There's no way I've been a part of that. Or the other response, which we were so gratified to see happen throughout the church, has been just a wide acceptance to say, look, perception is reality for this generation. And if that's how they feel about us as Christians, that's how they're viewing Jesus, and that's his reputation to them. So how can we be better at understanding what we've done to contribute to this? What beliefs have we held that have made us become self-righteous and made us look down on people who are different than us and treat them differently than really what we saw Jesus, how Jesus treated people?
What I see are people looking at the church crowd and they don't see much of Jesus. They see Baptist, Pentecostal, Charismatic, Catholic. They see some label or something, or like you said, an anti-person, rather than someone who's got a life that's so full of the life of God that it actually becomes magnetic. Attracted. Jesus said, if I'm lifted up, I'll draw all men to myself. You know, let the works show because the light shines appropriately and glorifies God and brings honor and glory to him. We don't see that happening, so something's out of place. We're either misguided or covered by something other than God, and we're hiding the light of his glory. So I hear you saying, hey, he's real. Why do people out here see him inappropriate? I think the media distorts the image. Anything Hollywood does, they show the ugly side or the ineffective or the inconsistent, hypocritical side of a Christian. The media tends to go and get the worst representatives of the Christian faith and put them up. If you really see the real clear deal, they don't often get it to us. But the deal is that I hear you saying it, if we get it right, the gates of hell and the walls of darkness can't stop this light from piercing it.
That's
it needs to affect every part of life on planet Earth. Now, that's what I hear you saying, and that's what I hear you saying the young people are saying. If
that's
this deal is real, then it ought to be a make a difference.
That's right. It shouldn't just be a set of beliefs that we ascribe to, but it should really impact the way we're living in our neighborhoods, the way we participate in our school systems, the way we participate in the kind of business and entrepreneurial activity that God's calling many people to do. It should make a difference in the songwriter, how they write music, the filmmaker, the documentarian. I mean, every single area and industry and space and sphere of society should be affected by the love of Christ and affected by the truth of the gospel. And I think this generation is hungry to see that, and they're hungry to not just hear about it, they want to experience it. That's why they're going on trips overseas. That's why they're rolling up their sleeves and not necessarily caring about making more money than their parents, but just getting involved in something meaningful and purposeful in their life. They're seeking transcendence. They're seeking after truth. But many of them aren't finding it in the Christian faith because to them, being Christian has meant all of these negative things. And so it's up to us and our generation, and we need the help of people in the generation that's come before us, to learn how to live and to walk in love and how to show and express that love to people. Because until we do that, do we even win the opportunity to share with them
the
truth of Jesus?
I don't believe anything is more powerful and more piercing, penetrating in a positive way than love. And I really believe, and I say this, and Gabe continually, that the greatest compromise of all is the refusal to release the love of God and to even love one another. We just divide and get conquered because we divide. I mean, we find a point at which we disagree, and rather than honing the edge so that we become keener and sharper, which is what I hear you seek to do in question, I would just simply say to your whole circle, put me in the middle of your circle. Put me in the middle of all the kids who got all the questions. Yeah. And I will be one of the first ones to say, we missed it there. Mm. And you know what? The example wasn't best. And we were off track, but we want to be on track. We want to be on track with you. Mm. But let me answer some of your questions. In other words, this is what's really in my heart. But anyway, the next Christians, let me read the subheading here. How a new generation is restoring the faith. And believe me, it needs to be restored. When Betty and I were changed years ago, when I mean literally delivered from religion, delivered from the image that people thought I was, to go back to first love and to really begin to share the love of God and become a servant, all of that, we were called the people of restoration and restoring things. And people wanted to start a kind of a restoration theology. I said, I'm not here to start some new theology. I want to release the power of God that impacts all of our thinking. So, you know, man, I like what you're talking about. So when you see this next bunch of Christians, tell me what they look like. I mean, I hope I can fit in. I mean, I want to make the cut.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, what I'm describing isn't just a young generation only. It's our generation responding to the cultural shifts that have taken place. I mean, no longer is the public square, the place where we're having conversations about faith, whether that's in our cities or in the salon, or whether it's taking place online where a lot of people are commenting and offering their opinions. In the place where these conversations are happening, the Judeo-Christian way of seeing the world is not the one that's winning out. And people don't necessarily operate off that same foundation that maybe Christians did or you and I did when I was growing up in the 80s even. That's just not something we can assume anymore. So in that environment where the church no longer is at the center of culture, it's kind of been pushed to the periphery, or we've taken ourselves really in a lot of cases out of the center to the periphery.
Yeah.
We're in that place where we all need to know how to engage, and how can we be faithful to the gospel, but also have credibility with our friends and neighbors. I don't think the gospel calls us to be weird in our culture in such a degree that we can't have conversations with people who are seeking after truth but just haven't found it in the church. I think we should be normal people who know how to get along and love people and meet them where they're at and let the love of Christ show through them. And so what I do in this book is really lay out the characteristics that I've seen in a 20 and 30 something generation who's coming along and really have had to deal with this new terrain, this new landscape of where people don't necessarily like Christians, and yet they're operating in every field of our culture. They're being faithful to the gospel, and they're finding some ways to live out the truth of God's love in a way that resonates with people, in a way that makes people and provokes them to ask questions about what's driving them and motivating them to live that way. And that's what I try to describe.
So when you talk about the next Christians, that could be us too.
It is.
It's not just the next
young. That's right.
Because I feel like we still have some things that God has permitted us to experience that we can offer to the younger generation that would be beneficial to them.
There's no doubt. And I think your life you've lived and modeled publicly and the experience you've gone through, to put that out in front of everybody and go through that journey and not just stay on the track you could have stayed on, where people loved you and would have loved to see you keep going down this path. You went through that transformation. You did it publicly so we all could see it. So people watching this could see what it looks like to really be transformed. And I think that's the kind of models we need. That's what I need, because in your generation, you have the ability to give us permission in a way we can't give to ourselves, and in a way you can release the next generation to start thinking in a new way, allow us in ways to apply it to the generation and the friendships and the new dynamics of our settings and neighborhoods and workplaces. But that's what we need. We need that empowerment. We don't want to just go off and try new things and repeat mistakes of history. We don't need to get off of our grounded orthodox ideas and theology. We don't need to get off the word and the authority of Scripture. We need to stay grounded in that and rooted in that. But we need your help. And so I think that's the need, and that's the call to your generation, is to help us.
What I believe I hear you saying is that you believe Jesus is actually magnetically attractive, that he is exactly Absolutely. Who he claimed to be and who he revealed himself to be, as if you've seen him, you've seen the Father. So he actually revealed the living God living among us and saying that this living God that he brought to us to redeem us so that we could be reconciled to God, that we could actually begin to behave like him because he's in us, enabling us to do that. And you were saying that he's still attractive, but there's something that the young generation has seen that doesn't look like him, is not necessarily attractive. It's not only turning people off outside the church, it's turning people off in the church. Dallas Willard, who's a great philosopher and written some great books, he says that about the time kids graduate from high school, they also graduate from church. Mm-hmm. They think they have finally moved beyond. It's because the relationships didn't always show them Jesus. They just had religion substituting relationship. Right. I hear you talking about relationship. I hear you talking about relationship that affects others because of the way you relate to the other people, the mm-hmm. way you communicate. Am I tracking at all?
Absolutely.
Were you tracking?
No, absolutely. And I think
I sound like I'm about 30.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, this is nice. I think what you mentioned is how the next generation, when we see statistics where they're leaving the church in droves at 18, but I would submit to you they're not leaving the church because they don't want to be Christian. They're leaving the church because they haven't been discipled to know how to think about and live in a way that's Christian, but also works in our world today. And part of that's because they've been taught the only thing a Christian's responsibility is to evangelize and to get people saved. And while that's definitely part of our responsibility as Christians, that's not all. We also have a way of living our life in every sphere of society, and a lot of Christians, I'm finding in this generation, are fired up because they no longer are living under the lie that the only way you can be a Christian that's faithfully following Jesus is to be a pastor or a missionary or run a ministry, which for many years when I grew up, I kind of thought that. Bob Briner wrote a book called Roaring Lambs where he says, you know, many of us, and he was in business, a great business guy out in L.A. who did amazing work as an agent, but he talks about how those of us who aren't in those roles feel like second-class Christians. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening is there's no more class system in Christianity. What's changing right now in this generation is we all realize we're priests, and we all realize that we have parishes that we're responsible for. And that's where I see this generation going, and that's why the opportunity is just enormous for us to move forward with your help and for all of us, not just the younger generation, all of us who are Christians today, to move forward with this mentality and bring the gospel with us in every corner of our world.
I want to encourage you to get the book. You appreciate what Gabe is saying. I like it. I bear witness. The Spirit in me bears witness with the Spirit in you. The moment you and I talked and we conversed, somehow we knew we were tracking on the same wavelength, which is a wavelength from above. I mean, we're getting some signals from divine signals, kingdom signals. If people wanted to access the website, find out about Q, find out the things you're doing, get the book, say, online, but they want to know, where would they go?
TheNextChristians.com, and then also the book's available anywhere. Amazon, you name it, every bookstore has it.
All right, I just recommend you get it. Let me show you something that we're doing that basically you really impact here. You make an impact in this regard, and that's touching people's lives. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the young people your age, they say, well, I'd rather go dig a well somewhere than just go down to some church and fit into the crowd. I want to make a difference. Well, that's what we're trying to do. And I'll be honest with you, Gabe, you probably never have a viewership anywhere you go where people have allowed the walls of sectarian divides to be pulled down any more effectively than the praying people to watch us. And they found out that living outside their world to make a difference in somebody else's world is actually living in the center of his world, his will. And I want to show you something. Listen, see, I'm confident you don't change channels. No matter how you tune in, because you're going to really see Jesus in a young lady's, really her broken heart. But here's the deal. You're the answer to the broken heart. You're the answer to what breaks her heart. You're the answer to what breaks the heart of God. I want you to watch closely.
How do you even begin to prepare your heart for such a trip as this? I don't think you can, but I do believe that your heart is forever changed. We travel out into the middle of nowhere, And I stepped out of the car and I looked around at hundreds of children. You could physically see the signs on their precious little bodies. You know, their hair was changing color and they were losing their hair. I mean, you can look around and see things aren't so good, but they didn't choose that for their lives. Things aren't so good for them because they had nothing to eat. In fact, I've learned of a child today who has collapsed, walks 2 miles every single day to come to school, but there's no food here for her, but she at least comes to school. Is it bad? Oh, gosh. Oh, Jesus, 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 Jesus. These children are malnourished, and they're collapsing because they're weak. I can barely take it, to be honest with you, and I think, gosh, what could I have done? There's so many moments like this that are happening all the time. That breaks my heart, because I can love them. I can love them deeply for moments, but then I leave. And I think for me, even being able to hug a child is my way of saying, God will provide for you.
I can't tell you how all of it goes on in my heart when I watch that. Betty, I saw Tammy referring to little kids trying to come to school, and I'm thinking, you know what, they're just barely strong enough to even try to do that, and they don't have anything to eat there. And Peter Pretorius started telling us years ago, we're going to start feeding kids at school because we want them to go to school. If they go to school, by the way, among girls, the attendance in schools jumps 70% on the part of girls if you'll feed them. And it's where a lot of them get their only nourishment of the entire week, their whole lives. And so what we try to do is find the most effective way to meet a need. But in many places, Betty, you know, we're going to crisis areas like Sudan, other areas, even in Angola and various places, and even some there in Mozambique, where the kids are still just so weak and malnourished. You'll see them in malnutrition clinics that we actually help have the supplies there. It's where kids go like, you know, they're going to die. And they kind of go there as last hope if they can find such a place. But the missionaries find the places to put them. But here's the deal. I don't care how much Tammy points you to a need, how much the missionaries take her and others like us with a heart to care and show them the need. If we don't have the ability to meet the need, all you do is stand there and cry. And you just weep. Or you see them try to go to school and yet they're too weak to really learn. And the missionaries say, you know what, we could feed here if we just have the ability to do it. So we try to do a total program of really transforming their lives. Here's what I'd like to ask you to do. Twice a year, we come to you and we say, look, help us feed children now for the next several months. $30 or $50 or $100, and this is not an exaggeration. This is not total child care. This is life-sustaining nourishment. It's restoring health, stabilizing them. We can feed 3, 5, or 10 children for that amount. I don't think there's a person watching that can't do something. Betty, I believe if each viewer would just look and say, okay, I see those little children she's pointing at, I'll take 3 of them. And for the next month, that's it. Or somebody can take 10. Everybody can help somebody. And we've really got the answer to their needs.
That's right. And I thought Tammy said something really interesting there at the close. She said, I can only hug them and love them for this moment, and then I leave. But there is a way. Through our giving, through our reaching out and saying, here, I'll give you some food. I'll feel your need. And I'll love you because it's Jesus' love. It will continue. So please join with us and let's feed these children.
You know, as I listen to you making that request, that appeal, you're pleading the cause of the needy, as the Old Testament prophet said, the widow, the orphan, the needy. And that's so appropriate. But as I listened to her doing that, my heart leaped inside because I said, guess what? We're talking to people who care. You don't just turn away. You have no idea how much you encouraged us when we came back from the mission fields and we said, you know, we just give everything up. Just leave. We'll come live here. The missionary said, please don't. They said, go back and tell them so we can stay here and make a difference. Please tell people so we can stay and help them. And you know what? You said, we'll help you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. That's what I'm asking you to do today. For the next several months, would you give $100 to feed his 10 children, 50 to feed 5, or 30 to feed 3. It may be that you can give more than that. We want to send you something to bless you. We always do. God's kingdom in you, the kingdom that you're expressing, the love of God you're releasing, we want to show you a little bit more about what it means to live in that spiritual gravity, the reality of His presence. We want to bless you. Thank you for making that call. Use your bank card like a check. Go online, make the gift. If you write a check, make it to Life, because that's what you're giving. And in behalf of those children you help, in many instances whose lives you save, thank you. Please make that special call.
At this very moment, a child is drawing her last breath, struggling to stay alive due to a lack of food. Sadly, this impoverished child is not alone, and without our help, many like her throughout Africa face death as well. Today, you can make a difference. You can save a life. Life's mission feeding teams are in place right now, ready to answer the hunger cries of 500,000 children throughout remote areas of Angola, Mozambique, and Sudan. With previous food reserves gone and Southern Africa facing its worst conditions and food shortage in more than two decades, we desperately need to replenish our supplies for the feeding programs immediately. Your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 will help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift, we'll send you the God's Kingdom in You audio series and companion scripture guide. James and Betty Robison, along with Beth Moore, inspire you to live every day in the power and presence of God. With your gift of $125 or more to help feed 10 children, you may request both the video DVD and audio series with scripture guide. As a bonus, we'll also send you Jim Hilton's new book, The Supernatural Skyline. Finally, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help save the lives of 100 children, and be sure to request the beautiful new Heart of the Father bronze sculpture. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online.
Well, Betty and I just say thank you in behalf of the literally the lives that you are rescuing. We thank you. We are anxious to send you the incredible teaching that I believe will bless you. Beth Moore sharing with Betty and me as we poured our heart out, God's kingdom in you, living in His presence in the present. And Jim Hilton's book, The Supernatural Skyline, we'd be really happy to send you Gabe's book today, The Next Christians. If you'll just simply help us reach out and rescue someone, do what you say you like to see done, be a part of it, be a demonstration of what you believe. I think you'll be inspired by the insights God's given Gabe. He's going to be back with us for another program, but would you join Betty and me in telling Gabe thanks for coming? Appreciate you being here, Gabe.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us. Thank you so much, and I repeat, thank you for sharing life today, not just watching.
I think it's a good example of how we have to be provoked to see people differently.
What will the next generation of Christians look like tomorrow? Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.